What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Greg Pappas in studio. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures down one. NASDAQ Futures down 4.25. As we come off the very interesting 4th of July weekend with yet another rain out of the NASCAR. Well, not really a rain out. Last year, what, they shortened the race? This year they did not, right? Greg, it was a full race?
No, they shortened it.
Was it how many miles was it?
It was supposed to be, what, 165 or so?
Yeah.
I think it's 58.
When was 58?
I don't know. It was shortened. We know
that.
Oh,
shortened? Okay.
Yeah,
it was. I saw the guys with the big machines blowing the water off the track, and those guys seem like they're kind of useless on wet pavement. They're just sliding all over the place.
I think the tires are more... Yeah, they switch out the tires and just go for it.
We're not talking about the rain tire back in the day.
Yeah, because it was... They delayed while they did that, and then also... They cut out early.
So they put those guys back in the car thinking the thing was going to start again, and they're sitting there in those outfits, and it's humid as hell, and it's hot. How miserable is that?
Doesn't feel good.
So if you're kind of a marketing guy. When somebody's got 50 advertising stickers stuck on his ass, what is the marginal?
I think Bowman had he's like super injured too, or he was. He's had some severe injuries the past couple years, so he's not only hot, he's hot, miserable, and probably aching.
So if somebody's got 50 patches on him, say, what's the marginal benefit of patch number 51?
Dinero.
In terms of money. Now, what would you pay for that? Let me get you a patch on there.
I don't know. Didn't Dr. J do some?
They were...
They sponsored
a car. They sponsored a driver, and he was lousy, I think.
Oh, can him.
Yeah, he didn't get anywhere, so I don't think it was a big deal. It was a good deal or not. I think they did something with wounded veterans or something. Something like that. Speaking of which, you know, we're going to have Diane Kelly on Thursday. Lou's out of town. Talk about Fisher House again and what the Veterans Administration is doing to help people and so forth. And probably have her on with Mike Murphy talking about it. So that should be interesting.
Good.
You lose out for 2 weeks. That's why he came on last Wednesday. I think they're doing some vacation, which is nice. So anyway.
Not too much going on?
Well, I don't know. There's always stuff going on in the courtroom, right?
Yeah.
Boy, the city, I'm glad to see you. You didn't get shot. You know,
well, I was in the suburbs.
Yeah, I was. We were. Let's see. What did we do? We're 17 killed, 84 wounded.
Yikes!
For the weekend. No, for the week, we're for 6:30. We're 26 and 102. We had what, an 8 lot and a couple of 5 lots.
Very sad.
Yeah, people got shot in front of the hospital.
The July 4th was brutal.
You know, I didn't think people who shot people were up this early. 6:15 in the morning on the 4th of July. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Shot at 71st and Woodlawn. Then we had, here's an 8 lot someplace. 1300 West Hastings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 12:15 a.m. I'm going to say not a whole lot of people were arrested, if any. And we've got the people shot right in, they were standing in front of the hospital in New York, Chicago. At least they were close, bring them right inside, right? That's kind of where the...
That's terrible, don't say that.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's actually because my brother's just staying, one of the, his daughter goes out with this guy, Dan, terrific guy. He's a paramedic, he used to be a paramedic for the city, but now he's a paramedic fireman from one of the burbs. He didn't think the city was the best thing. So he says, yeah, it's right where the ambulances turn in. 5700 South Cottage Grove.
Between 6 a.m. of July 4th and 6 a.m. of July 5th, 49 people were shot, 8 people died. That was...
Yeah, like a one-day deal.
That was July 4th to July 5th, 6 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah, it's...
3 mass shootings, of which...
Now, what's your definition of mass shooting?
I don't know. Isn't it more than 3?
Actually, you can...
it doesn't matter. Jeez. There's 49 people one day, 8 dead.
Well, when I ask you that, there is actually a site that I went to once. Who knows if I can find it again. And it'll have listed like all the shootings countrywide for the last, 15, 20, 30 years. It's a pretty interesting site. And when you search for mass shootings, you get to tell them how many that were in there. You might say 8.
And then that's smart.
Then you'll get, 30 of them. You might say 7, and you'll get like 80 of them. So you get to determine what's a mass shooting.
Man, I think I would get depressed if I was running that website.
Yeah, okay. Well, what about if you're running Hey Jackass?
Yeah.
So here's the clearance rate. 2023 homicide clearance. I mean, we're acting like this is funny, but if you live in Chicago, it is absolutely not funny. Because there's no, they don't even talk about it. I mean, it's just okay. I don't get it.
Probably pretty sure they know who's doing it. They just can't.
They don't want to.
About it.
They don't want to. You can always do stuff.
Well.
I kind of resist when a lot of people say, just can't deal with it. Yeah, you can. The question is, what's his name say in The Untouchables? What are you prepared to do?
Well, the city, not so much.
No. Well, here's the total homicide. This is 2023. This is last year. Total homicides, guess how many?
Total?
Yeah, last year.
Oh, man. I don't know.
627.
Oh.
Yeah, this is not shot and put back together. This is DED dead. No suspect charge, 480. Suspect charge, 119. That doesn't add up right, does it? The bar to prosecute, what does that mean, 19?
Well, you're still below.
The death of offender, 9 of 9 of the offenders croaked.
Yikes.
Yeah. So we're not exactly putting these people in jail, are we?
I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, if we have... How many zillion more cameras do we need if these people are jumping out of cars and shooting people and just jumping back in? We don't have license plates. We don't have the kind of the car.
Even if you do have a license plate, it's probably stolen. Maybe. They ditch the car. They're not dumb.
Well, I'm saying if you want to deal with it, you can. We don't seem to want to. I'm not saying I would want to be the guy who does it, and I'm not so sure what people would like the cures, but there are cures, right?
Yeah. Martial law.
Well, I don't know if you'd actually call it martial law. How about 50 to 70?
Some iteration.
No, maybe some people would call it police work.
You need police for that.
Well, how about 100 unmarked cars, like my pickup truck? Just kind of cruising around. If people jump out and start shooting, you have cameras, you have a loudspeaker that says, drop the guns immediately, we're firing back, and if they don't, you machine gun the hell out of the thing.
Yeah, that's called martial law.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, I said hundreds of times, I don't want to be the person to do this, but... Here's one thing I do feel, Greg, and nobody can talk me out of. I feel more concerned for the person being shot than I am the person doing the shooting.
Well.
And I know I seem to be alone with that. I don't know why.
Yeah, the politics don't enable harsh police anything. So.
Okay, but I mean, I don't want... That's true. I would say I would not want to run on this platform. I don't want to do it. I don't want to have 15 people gunned down at night just because they were gunned down on people. They're people. But the point is, at some point, when you leave with the intention of shooting other people, there's a chance your night might not end well.
Yep.
I mean, it's just... Anyway. But people are always going to have... There's always going to be a couple of bad people somewhere. It doesn't matter. I mean, white, black, blue, green, whatever it is. But anybody who thinks that this is not destroying this city, the economics here, would you invest here?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a problem. No. There's people that are losing boatloads of money in this town, in these buildings, and you know, I think that that's, you know, what happens if a city like Chicago essentially goes down?
It's already happened, right?
What? It's certainly happened in our part of the loop because the financial industry's gone down.
Yeah.
But I mean, there still must be some people around because they're building houses and a lot of people living here. It's hard to find a rental place.
Well, that's
what do you think is doing great? I mean, the
West Loop is doing great.
West Loop is doing, although
that's only a few minutes away.
I think their growth is slowing. A couple of buildings there have sold.
Yeah.
But I mean, these are economic issues that pile into. I mean, how long can we have buildings losing hundreds of millions of dollars and not have some firm that people invest in all of a sudden say, we got a problem? I mean, is it just mystery money?
I know we said earlier, but if you're interested, the JW in the loop here is up for sale now. So,
no,
it's a hotel.
How does
the firm that bought it, I think, they defaulted on the loan, I think, 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Right.
And the firm that bought it put a little bit of money into it, and now that it's recovered a little bit, it's for sale. So
do you
anybody
have any
is a buyer, have at it.
Do you have any idea what the relationship is between the people who I think own the place and the name
Not
on
from here.
The name on the door?
In that instance?
Well, any of them.
I think most Marriotts are franchisees.
Okay, the thing I was kind of zeroing in on is the Palmer House Hilton.
Well, that's always been kind of a disaster.
Well, but I mean, is any of it, I guess, is the Hilton just something the place buys for reservations and all that kind of stuff? Or if the place goes under, I don't think Hilton's on the hook, are they? I don't know, I'm asking.
They've busted twice. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think Hilton's taking a hit.
Not really. But, you know, we're playing musical chairs with the people. There's only a certain amount of people here and that really come, and then, you know, they switch to the nicer places and then the other ones kind of peter out.
Well, the idea of those places,
the growth
was,
would be nice,
was to have some places close to the financial district.
Yeah.
And that's, well, this place here on the corner. They essentially remodel a whole building to be a luxury hotel down here in the financial district. Between COVID and the financial district going under, it's been empty for what, a decade?
Didn't work.
No. And they got rid of the Billy Goat, which is bad.
Even worse.
Yeah, and the taco joint, the Burrito King.
Yeah, the Burrito. Yeah.
They kicked everybody out, and then, oh, plus the, what was the other place? The Vietnamese and the Thai place, right?
Wow Bao?
They were on, well, there was them, and it was Billy Goat, and it was the Burrito joint.
Yeah.
At least they had leases from those people. Now they got nothing.
Maybe it's losing money on purpose.
I don't know how that ever exactly works. What's going on in the world of commodities? Is there a trade? Roger and I were driving around. Corn looks pretty good. It's way higher than knee high by the 4th of July.
We had, you know, significant rains, and we probably have a bunch more stored than normal. So the farmer has a lot in the bin. It's rallied. Both row crops that I follow, corn and beans, have rallied a little bit. And they're kind of giving farmers an exit ramp here to sell a whole bunch of what they've held. There's a lot in the bin, so...
What you're saying, is there a demand for the spot?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
demand,
so it's...
Demand for the spot, and the crush margins are going up. Meaning,
now, what does that mean?
Meaning those beans are worth more because as you process them, their products individually are worth more. So their profit from buying the beans and processing it is going up significantly. So, you know, there's that demand for beans, and the farmer has it. It's a question of, is he going to sell? Is he going to sell what's in the bin? And I would, if it were me, I would be saying yes, just because watching the price go down to call it 11 some, a few couple weeks for the past couple of weeks. You know, that doesn't feel good when you're long a whole bunch of green. And the price just kind of keeps going down. You've got good weather. So now what we're watching for is more of the weather. So,
Greg, what a lot of this was the, what year ago is this? The, I'm actually going at it right off the top of my head. There was a year we were doing the show, so it wasn't like that long ago, where there was a year when the market would tell you that everybody sold their grain, pick a year. Then the next year there was this, it was supposed, there I think there was a bumper crop in the ground, and so the futures, the December corn was like real cheap, well, relatively cheap. And yet, we had some people who were helping us with the show, and was, they weren't really part of PTI, but they hung around here a little bit. We did a lot of stuff with the future stuff that worked for the agricultural department and things like that. And they would actually buy grain, spot grain, for some of the foreign governments, Thailand, China, so forth. And there was a summer
where that was part of the reason that we think the grain or the bean oil rallied last week. Okay. There's a problem in Indonesia, between Indonesia and China, some politics thing, and one of Indonesia's big exports is palm oil, and as soon as they got in there, it's very similar to bean oil. So,
but there's a palm plant.
Yeah, palm oil is almost interchangeable with bean oil.
Okay.
So as that started to heat up, people knowing that it was going to be an issue for them started buying bean oil here, and you know, once that fire got lit, it rallied to what, 10%. I mean, they just saw it coming, and now the thought is, as if that gets bad enough, they're just going to quit buying from Indonesia, come here, take what they want from with the bean oil, and wash their hands of whatever they were doing with them.
Well, but
that was politics.
When you say it's almost the same, if I'm going down the aisle in a supermarket and I'm actually buying some, you know, oil to fry like my turkey in or something, I'm probably not going to buy palm oil. I don't know what it is. Well, now I do, I guess.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's not something that a consumer here would necessarily buy, or would he not know? Is it disguised as something else?
I don't think so. I mean,
yeah, I've never seen it in a supermarket, all of you.
Well, that's because we got so much bean oil.
And corn oil.
And corn oil, yeah, we don't really think about it. But you can find it if you look, yeah.
Whatever I was saying about when Chris was doing this stuff, they were actually trying to buy spot corn, and it was in very short supply. So the futures were, let's say, $4, and if you could find spot, it was like 5.5 or 6, right? It was incredibly higher.
Yeah, that happens. That happens.
Because the year before was a crummy, and some country bought some because they had a problem. Whatever it stacked up to where, and you know, when we say this a lot on the show, I mean, one of the themes, if there is such a thing, is that everything kind of relates to something else. And Audrey and I took a ride out to this restaurant that was closed, where the hell we used to go to, and we're driving down the street, and these guys got, you know, it's you know, there's farms still there. So one guy's got the silos that you couldn't believe, Greg, for a size of the farm. And that's what people did. The farmer said, hey, this is BS. I sold my stuff at $4, and here it is 2 months later, it's like $6.50. You know, I could have made my banner year and retired from this gig. So all of a sudden, guys said, I'm not going to sell my corn early like that, or I'm not going to hedge it all. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to store it here. I'm not going to sell it to the grain guy.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Well, but if you were in the silo business, didn't they have 1 or 2 years where you couldn't find a guy to build a silo?
Right.
And now they have some of these things are incredible. I went by and go, Audrey, that place looks like a grain elevator. It was a guy's farm. It looked like he could store like 10 farms on the thing.
Yeah, just in case.
Yeah. But sometimes when you have this year, we drove to Ohio 1 year, and there was a huge grain elevator, and, you know, we're on a state road in Ohio. This massive grain elevator, and the guy's got probably 10 of these silos. They had so much grain, they had it piled up outside. Was that like the well, that's a great time for if you're a field mouse, right?
Right.
Anyway, but so you don't see necessarily a trade here. I mean, is it time to get long this stuff or short it, or just bleh?
As it rallies, I'm a proponent of selling volatility, but that's not for everyone.
You mean out of the money calls?
I would say call spreads.
Call spreads, okay.
Yeah, you kind of cap your loss. The bean oil, for what I do, if bean oil's leading the crush, I'm always fading the crush because that's just the relationship kind of I found from a while trading it. But we've rallied, the margins, or the crush margins have gone up so much, and based on the bean oil, you know, I don't think that's usually sustainable. So
now why would
you sell a few call spreads in the crush, or you pick up a few puts in the bean oil? Stuff like that would be kind of the macro. The corn and beans, you really don't know yet.
Well, so if when we talk about the crush, okay, we'll do this real quick. Only about a minute to go here. When you get a soybean and you do something with it, you end up with meal, which is a food
animal
stock.
Animal feed.
And then you end up with oil, which is in your...
And I just looked it up here. Palm oil is actually larger than bean oil throughout the world. So.
Well, it doesn't come from a palm tree, does it?
Is
there a palm plant?
Plant, yeah.
All right, well, I don't know. I've never seen one of those. Have you?
Let's see if we can post one on the show notes later.
Well, and so if all of a sudden there's a bigger demand for the oil than, say, the meal, what does that mean? Anything? Is there a message there?
The fruit of the oil of palm tree. So.
Okay.
Yeah. It's bigger than bean oil.
Well, so the palm trees have fruit, and it's a fruit. Okay.
It's the edible vegetable.
Okay, coconut. Of,
it's the oil that comes from the oil palm trees.
All right. Well, so if one of them spikes more than the other, the meal means what? There's more animal feed, or what if the oil goes higher? What does that mean? There's more restaurants
that's
open,
usually,
or what?
Usually, means there's some kind of government program for biodiesel or something that's
okay.
You know, halfway related to seed oil. So, what the oil share is another product that we kind of monitor and watch, meaning the ratio of oil to meal. So the ratio that comes from, you know, one contract of beans that you have. It's just one way of saying, you know, oil's getting more expensive or cheaper relative to meal.
So these people that do this, there's one out on Archer Avenue, they get massive railroad cars full of soybeans.
And then they process the beans.
And massive cars go out with oil and meal in them,
and
right?
And sell, yeah.
That's interesting. S&P futures up up 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 75 cents. We have a CPI on Thursday, which I think people are going to think is a big number, because it probably is. We had the labor report on Friday, which we'll go over a little bit more. We get John on and Greg. We went over it with Carl, but it was somewhat of an interesting report, mainly because most people don't necessarily understand it all that much, and I don't really understand all the adjustments, which I never could quite figure out. But one thing about Carl is he strips away the adjustments, because we just go year over year. But the thing that's surprising is the difference between the household survey and the establishment survey, and we're gonna go through it a little bit when we get back. So S&P futures up one, NASDAQ futures up 175. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas in studio. We got Matt Byrne on the board. We have Jan Flanagan with us in a second. He's going to tell us all about this. These guys have been voting for like a month. They finally ended up where evidently the conservatives did not make the big splash they thought they would in the final election, just enough to scare everybody. So Macron probably didn't do as well as he thought when he impulsively said we need a new election, but he's still probably going to be in power and put something together. Matter of fact, the winner seems to be the far liberal left, further left than Macron, right? Anyway, crazy world. Dow futures up 23 on Friday. We had a slow day. The Dow was up 67, S&P up 30, NASDAQ up 164. Imagine that, up. Europe, today, DAX up 74.4%, FTSE up 25.3, CAC around up 13.2. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 131, but they're still way over 40,000, 40,780. So Japan, how would you like to be over there? Japan, nobody has sex. That's a problem. Japan real wages fell for the 26th straight month. What kind of policy is that, Greg? For God's sake.
I think these are independent things, but you know.
Well, part of it is they're not replacing their entire population. You know, is there are no young people. Hang Seng down 275, 1.5%. These guys, 17,524. Ouch, ouch, ouch. They're way under 18,000. Shanghai, who's supposed to be pumping money in to pump all this up, they're pumping things down. They're down another 27, 29, 22, and they're not even close to 3,000 now. Bonds up 3 basis points, 4.30. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.54. Japan up 2 to 1.09. Again, those guys are 0.93 five, 6 weeks ago. Oil. We've got oil down 82 cents, 82.34. Still at the upper end of the range, but not really a breakout yet. Brent down 68 cents, 85.66. Natural gas unchanged, 232. RBUB down 2 cents, 253. Oil slips as Gaza talks ease supply worries. Gold down 15 bucks. It's been pretty high, 2382. Silver down 35 cents, 3133. Copper unchanged, 464. But gold eases on from May peak on profit taking. We don't really know why they sold it, but it's sold. Bitcoin up 29 bucks, 57,131. Kind of nowhere near to 68 it was like 3 weeks ago, right? And we also have the FX, foreign exchange, US dollar 108. So it's weakening again. I'm sorry, it's strengthening against the euro. And the British pound is 128. So, I'm sorry, it's weakening against both of these. Dollar is soft. It's one of the, it's been soft now for a while. I don't know why that is necessarily. We'll try and figure that out. Matt, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. Currently 6:37 here on July 8th, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, we're looking at 72 degrees this morning. Humid and some sun today. Scattered thunderstorms likely downtown this afternoon. High of 81 degrees today. Meanwhile, down in Phoenix, 91 degrees right now. Sunny skies and a high of, get this, 117 degrees today. And I looked it up. I want to be see if I was sure, but the highest record temperature in Phoenix is 122 degrees. That was set on June 26th of 1990. So going to be really hot down in Phoenix today. Over to sports, in the MLB yesterday, Cubs beat Los Angeles Angels 5-0. Meanwhile, the White Sox lose to Marlins 7-4. Tonight, White Sox are at home with the Twins. Game starts at 7:10 p.m., and the Cubs will be back on Tuesday against the Orioles. That's all I got now, Chief. Back to you.
We have Jan?
We do indeed.
Good morning.
So, Jan, we have one of our creatures, friends, a California dude, was talking about how he was going to go to Death Valley. For the 130 degree, it was supposed to maybe encroach the old record of 130. And of course, we had this going back and forth on the tweets, texts. Evidently, some guy croaked there yesterday. This motorcycle group decided they could make it through Death Valley at 128 degrees, and two people had problems, and one guy didn't make it. There you go. They can't even go after you in a helicopter. These helicopters don't want to fly. Evidently, it's hard to fly a helicopter if it's 128 degrees. Don't know why, but not a helicopter mechanic. But so there. We'll just saying.
Well, I can't imagine living in the cold. Nobody, I think, lives in a lot of those places year round anyway. You have to set a place or a fallback plan of some kind. It's just unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the term Death Valley. It's kind of a turnoff. The term Death Valley is your homestead. Yeah. Just saying.
Palm Springs was 124 the other day.
Yeah.
Record breaker for that day there, too. So.
Well, Fari Hamzi used to be on the air with us. Fari's from Iran, and he's pretty familiar with Middle East and hot places and so forth, and he was talking about global warming. He was not into, the guy next door's got a gas lawnmower, so he's causing the global warming kind of thing. But he was saying in some of those areas, you're really within, what he used to say, 3, 4, 5 degrees of nothing being able to live there. But if it's 120, the camels and the whatever else is in the desert, the bugs and everything can live. Because if it's 135, camels can't live. And neither can this, neither can even the bugs, for God's sake. So you're kind of on the edge. If you go from 125 highs or 122s to 132s, because you can't live there. You're going to talk about massive migrations of people, which we hope that does not happen.
It's been happening, through history, Tom. That's the thing about climate. In Antarctica, places that you don't associate with. Be able to support life. Sometimes has very different climatically.
Well,
so
it does
force people to decide to get out of one place to get into another. So there's always pressure to do that because of climate, I think. And we just don't see it in the big picture because we don't have good enough records to equate what's going on temperature-wise with human movements or animal life. It's definitely something that needs to be taken into consideration.
Well, I was reading or actually was listening to something on the History Channel regarding the Sahara Desert. It used to be all, fertile plains at one point.
Yeah. And Iran, places that we associate now with places that are uninhabitable or hostile to habitation, they weren't always that way, nor will the ones that are habitable necessarily always be habitable either. So it's the way the planet works. It's the way the planet works. So.
Well, without getting into
if you wait 20,000 years, supposedly it'll come back.
Well, we don't really have that time horizon, do we?
Why not?
What do you got?
Elon will make us all AI.
A little AI.
Right, yeah.
AI. I was speaking of AI intelligence. I was listening to both of your favorite people yesterday, right in a row. Audrey's got me driving around picking up a rug for her, of course. Things you do. It's fine, though. I'm listening to one of these shows, political shows, in the car, and they have Bernie Sanders followed by Lindsey Graham. And I'm going, here's two opposite ends of the fence. And so, Audrey, who is, fairly conservative, she tells me all the time that we were energy independent under Trump, and we're not anymore because Biden has killed the industry.
Sorry, I was 1,000 years off. The Sahara Desert grows green every 21,000 years.
How close
are we? It depends on the Earth's axis.
Okay,
just be patient.
Be patient. There you go. So, I wonder where she got it. So, the guy asked Lindsey Graham the question, something about Trump's latest tweet, or last week, said something about he's going to institute military tribunals to track down, who's the lady he doesn't like? She's name is Graham, too, or is it McCain's daughter? Somebody in the party he doesn't like, that doesn't support him. And he's going to have a military tribunal to go after him, or her. So he asked Lindsey Graham, is this going to happen? So what do you suppose Lindsey Graham, who I absolutely cannot stand, what do you think his answer was? He's gonna close the border and he's gonna regain energy independence. Well, I'm gonna say for the people on the far right, everybody I've talked to, everybody has this energy independence thing on the tip of their tongue, where we're energy independent under Trump and we're not under Biden. Now I'm not a big fan of. Now I want you guys, being the
wait, what was this thing about military tribunals?
Yeah, that was one of the latest things. He's gonna put military tribunals together to go after people that...
The illegals?
No. Like senators and people that don't like him.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't... This is what this announcer was saying. Now, my question to you guys, this is strictly above board. I'm looking at the U.S.
Was he a JAG? What was he?
Who?
Lindsey Graham.
Oh, I don't know. What kind of JAG? You're talking about a judge? Yeah.
I think he was but
this is what Trump has been saying. Just Google Trump and military tribunal, see what comes up. So my question to you gentlemen is, I'm looking at the U.S. field production. Now, of course, I'm one of the people that discuss these things with all the time, was saying, this is like a week ago.
Can I get ahead of you here?
Sure.
Yes, it's possible for the U.S. to have $50 oil and for the rest of the world to have $150 oil.
Yeah, oh yeah. Without a doubt. I'm looking at the numbers here. So the person who I was arguing with was talking about under energy independence under Trump. And I said, by the way, when's the last time you looked at oil production in this country, the table? Why would I look at that? Well, because you're like saying something that should have be backed up by something, like maybe production numbers or anything like that. I know what I hear. Where do you hear it? Well, on Newsmax. Okay, fine. Well, explain to me this, Lucy's. If when Trump left office, we were 11,172 barrels of oil per day production in this country. We're now 13,248. Now, I don't want to get into whether Biden likes oil, doesn't like oil, whatever. So explain to me how we were energy independent 3 years ago when we're producing 20% more now than we did then, and now we're not. I mean, what am I missing here?
Well, look at the gas prices for starters, I think.
Well, they're not any higher.
They're a lot higher than they were five years ago.
They're 15 cents lower than they were 3 years ago, countrywide.
But I'm talking 5 years ago.
Well, I mean, I'm saying, and I'm looking at natural gas production. Okay, which is, where the hell is that? In 2020, natural gas production at the end of 2020 was 3.5 million something, and now it's 3.7. Again, I'm not saying that Biden and his group doesn't talk bad about oil or other stuff, but the fact is, how exactly have we become less independent when we're producing a hell of a lot more than we did 4 years ago? I wonder if Lindsey Graham has anything behind his mouth, other than his mouth, is my question. Now, you can go into whether Biden likes oil or not, and what he says about it. Yeah, I understand that part. But if you actually look at the numbers, are we just never supposed to look at the numbers, or what?
I don't know about those numbers, for one thing.
They go back 80 years, John, every single month.
I'm just saying, look at the CPI numbers. Look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
All right, you're telling me that we aren't actually doing 13 million barrels of oil a day.
Well, we may be doing it, but we don't have access to it. We're selling it to the Chinese, like we did with the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as soon as Biden got in. That was oil not available to people in this country. So producing it and having access to it, I think, are two different things.
Well, if we're still importing stuff from places. We exported, even though when we weren't supposed to export oil, right? We did export oil. Now you might say, gee, Chief, how the hell could that be? Well, when you pulled stuff off the North Slope, when that thing was producing real lot, it was a hell of a lot, and Japan was buying oil from, say, the Middle East. It was a hell of a lot cheaper to ship the stuff from Alaska to Japan and the stuff from the Saudi to us. So it was essentially a trade. Were we exporting when we weren't supposed to be? Technically, yes. But we also were getting a trade on what Japan was buying from the Middle East. You could sort of save on transport numbers. Some of our oil was going there and some of them back. But it's hard for me to believe, in my opinion, an idiot like Lindsey Graham telling me that we used to be all this and now we're not. And I'm going, wait a minute. We got way more than we ever have. What are you talking about? I mean, if he were to say, okay, look, the reason why I'm saying this, and give me some detailed description, I might actually listen to him, John.
I think they're talking about energy independence, meaning we're gonna subsidize the price here and nowhere else, and let's do it that way. Or drill so much that we can actually make a dent in oil, world oil prices, which could happen.
Right, George Bush, the second, big fan of oil, right? He leaves office in 2008. When he left, we were doing 5.1 a day.
I found the Tribunal's quote, by the way.
Okay, what does it say?
In, I don't know, I think you saw some fake news. It's Lindsey Graham says, here's what I know. I know we're not going to have televised tribunals or trials of Liz Cheney or anybody else.
Okay.
I believe the country's at an inflection point, blah, 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 politics, blah, blah, blah. If you want to change this course we're on, you need to go back to President Trump. Policy does matter. We'll get our border under control. We'll become energy independent again.
But he knows we're not going to have tribunals, even though Trump said we might.
Yeah, he wants, and he said, and we'll bolster our allies and put enemies on their back foot.
Ah.
So the Biden I've seen, I'm very concerned, is not capable of being commander-in-chief for 4 more months. So let's have testing to resolve this debate.
Are we going to give the same test to Trump?
Yeah. Let's test Trump. Let's test Biden. Let's test everybody in the line of succession.
Who would want to test those two guys?
I would.
What are you going to find? What exactly is a?
I hope they put it on TV.
John, what exactly is a test of mental competence? What do you do? What do you give somebody? I don't know how to even do that.
Well, you know, Trump talked about the.
I've had it done to me before.
You know,
I got hit in the head.
Basic short-term memory issues. Being able to recall things accurately that are in the recent past. You know, they're just given to you a couple minutes before. But I don't think that testing them is, you know, the solution either. Because who's going to be administering the test?
Well, that's what I mean.
The most.
And who's going to report them? And who's going to, you know, decide which test? And how do you equate, you know, different kinds of tests or different versions of tests? So it's just another smoke screen. I mean, the more access a candidate has to the public to answer questions that person has not had a chance to screen ahead of time and do it with the cameras letting the job do it for the people and not somebody intervening to say what that person really meant to say, that's the best cognition test of all. But there's very few politicians that ever submit to that. When was the last time J.B. Pritzker, just for an example, this is a guy who has presidential ambitions, is, to my knowledge, he has never been at a press conference.
Oh, yeah, he has. During COVID, he was.
It's a freewheeling, open-ended.
Yeah, he was. During the COVID.
I've not seen it.
Don't you remember when Trump had the cognitive test, he kept on saying the words?
God.
So when they're initially evaluating you at the beginning, they'll say, like, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. By the way, I want you to remember these 5 words or these 3 words. And then they tell you the words, you know, computer, phone, napkin, headset or something. And then they ask you like 5 minutes later after they're doing their physical stuff. But that's part of it. And Trump, when they did it to him, he kept on saying it even after in the TV interviews. There's good clips on YouTube of him saying person, woman, man,
oh,
camera,
God.
TV. And he kept on saying it for like a week after he took him. But the cognitive test is is, can you do rote memory? Can you, like...
Well, like Jan says, it's whoever's given the test. They can do whatever you want. You can make somebody look good or bad. But, so, Jan, you know, every CEO...
I mean, no, there's a standard for a cognitive test.
Well,
are we going to be fair? Lot of people.
We have, you know, when you talk about the president getting only certain amount of questions that he wants, every CEO that comes on CNBC, they don't answer any questions. They send their questions ahead. And if you don't answer those questions, they never come back in.
Well, that's what Prisker was doing all during the lockdown.
I'm going to push back on that.
In front of him, who asked all the questions that had already been selected, and I'm sure Prisker had already been given to formulate his answers.
I'm going to say
the whole thing was a joke. Now
I'm going to say, Jan, I don't know. You weren't listening to this. You might have been. I don't know what you were up to. You're probably with the APRA or something. You know, Jan's very sophisticated. I was listening to his news conference in the COVID, and somebody in Michigan or someplace had just shut down something. So for whatever reason, Pritzker was having this news conference every day, and I'm saying, why is he putting himself through that?
It wasn't a news conference, Tom.
Jan, I'm telling you, I'm listening to the thing. The people there were brutal to him. Most of them female, by the way. Of course. But the guy was, he tried to start something, and somebody interrupted and go, you don't care as much about people as the people from Michigan? He's like, we have no reason to close restaurants again at this time. What do you mean? You don't care about your population? They were on that guy. It was like they were throwing stuff at him, Jen. And the next day, he closed whatever it was the person in Michigan did because the abuse he got at this press conference. He should never have had it, I don't think.
Well, that may be the only one he ever did have.
Maybe.
I didn't watch it, so I can't say for sure. But it must be the only one of its kind, because I saw 30 or 40 of them with anything but open press conferences.
Well, nobody went.
Like any CEO, Tom, any politician today is going to screen themselves as much as possible from any kind of, you know, having somebody springing something at them.
Jen, we had a page.
There's a lot riding on fumbling it or saying something stupid.
A gentleman named Pedro de Costa used to come on the show a lot. We should probably try and track him down. He's a great guest. And he was the Wall Street Journal's, what do you want to call it, person that went to the Fed press conference. And they first started doing the Fed conferences after the announcements, when Janet Yellen, who I, you know, she's on my whatever list. Not violent list.
Cheating list?
Oh, just...
Celebrity list?
Whatever, something.
Celebrity list.
The $7 million girl between the two government jobs. I just can't. I have trouble with that. Anyway... She's there, and Pedro gets the mic, and he says, this is when the Fed was accused of leaking information out, people were trading on it, and they said, we're going to handle the investigation internally and not anybody else involved. He said to her, Chairman Yellen, how's that investigation going, or something like that. And you could see she was like your grandma was going to grab the broom and throw it at you. She visibly stiffened. You could tell how pissed off she was, and said something about, she'll address that at a later time. And evidently, her people called the Wall Street Journal, and he was never invited back. So, John, I'm with you on that. You're not arguing me on that. I'm just saying, somewhere along the line here, I'm looking at these numbers. You don't ever want to lift, you don't want to look this stuff up, because all it does is give you questions. I'm going to say, in our recent lifetime, who is the most oil-friendly president that we know of? I'm going to say... Well, I'm going back 25 years. I'm going to say Bush 2. When he got in office, our production was 5.8 million barrels a day. When he left, it was 5.1. Okay? So here's a guy who's, I mean, he's up to his eyeballs in the Saudis and everybody, and he loved the oil industry, right? So when Obama gets in office, which would be 2008 or so, 5.1. When he leaves, we're at 8.8. I don't think Obama was all that bullish or bearish on oil.
It's more about technology.
It's about technology. Yeah. It's about the companies are bigger than you are, supply and the industry is huge. You're not going to get a president that's going to turn it off. They're going to do all kinds of weird stuff, but it's not going to do anything. So he leaves, okay, in what, 2016. Trump comes in, it's 9.2. No, it's 8.9. And when he leaves, it's 11.1. So we were up 2 million barrels a day under the Trump administration, and now this guy's up 2 million barrels a day. Maybe not quite as much. Trump was up a little more than he is. He was up maybe 2.2, and this guy's up. So you look at these numbers. There's nothing to even talk about in terms of who is plus. There's no difference. There's no question. The rhetoric is different, but neither one of them is bigger than the production line. It appears. That's what I'm looking at.
How do you explain then, Tom? That, you know, what was it, 2 years ago or less than 2 years ago, when Biden, you know, was asking the Saudis to lower prices because we needed the oil and we needed it at a cheaper price, and it was completely ignored. So there's no energy independence in that formula that I can see.
Okay, so back then when he did that, we were 11.1 a day. Now we're 13.2.
So I'm saying two years ago is when he went to
okay,
the Saudis.
Okay, that was 12.1, and now we're 13.2.
If we're producing all this oil, where is it going?
Well, the last year when Saudi lowered their production, what did it do to prices? Nothing. So we are way more independent at 13.2 than we were at 11.2, than we were at, certainly, than we were at 5, right? I mean,
I'm just going to float this idea, but I really think that this oil is going somewhere other than to domestic.
The people on the right are striving for. I'm just looking at production.
What? I'm just saying, Tom. I mean, the number that oil is being pumped out of this country that we're producing is somehow all consumed and is available for consumption for people in this country, I don't think is true. How could it be true?
Well, whatever it is, whatever we're doing, we got more than we had before.
And who's reporting those numbers? Are they reported? Somebody must know them.
Well,
but they're not.
Well, the largest users as the resident commodity person.
We must have all used it.
We started these numbers in 1920.
Or China and us.
Greg, you're good at this. Why don't you figure out what we're going to go on to another subject?
We don't use as much. We maybe use half as much oil as China, but, you know, per person.
Per person. What? Yeah. Why don't you look and see U.S.?
Then after us is India, meaning nominally, maybe, you know, China is doing close to 400 billion. You know, we're probably around 200, and then India's probably around 200.
Why don't you just Google U.S. oil consumption per day? I bet it's
for
a little,
the U.S.?
Yeah, I bet it's like 15. I bet we still import 2.
I can look.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's go to a quick break here. We'll be right back. S&P futures up a buck. NASDAQ futures up 6. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Up there swinging. Back to throw. There's a left side. It's going to be, I believe. The Giants have the pellet. The Giants have the pellet.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alman on the board. Greg Pappas in the studio. Jen Flanagan arguing with me from afar. S&P futures up one, Nasdaq futures up five. Hey, Jen, you had a chance to let's get off the kind of the oil number, because right now I got imports and exports about even. And a lot of times that we do that just for some of the, a lot of it we're sending out refined products too. Natural gas production's up a little bit too, but not a whole hell of a lot. Now, some of that Europe doesn't want, because the price is down so low, they don't want to be importing as much either. But yeah, I have a question for you. We're not going to dig into the numbers like Carl does, because he's way better at it. But the one thing I have noticed here, if we've been doing the show and listening to Carl, is the difference. I mean, most listeners probably know, but I'd say most people in society do not know, that there are two totally separate employment surveys. Now, how you do the one at home when people don't have landlines and stuff, I don't know, but somehow they're doing it. So last Friday, we came up with the 208,000, Greg, the new jobs. That's from the, quote, establishment survey. The 4.1 increase in unemployment, that's from the household survey. Now, you might say, what the hell is the difference? Well, the difference is, one, the establishment survey is just that. You call up and you say to PTI, how many people are working? We've got 8 or 6 or 12 or 100. And then last month, how many did you have? You know, whatever. We have 100 now. We used to have 95. Okay, you picked up 5. So that's a nationwide somewhat sample. I've never known anybody who was sampled, but then that goes for a lot of places. And they say, okay, we've picked up 208,000 jobs from all the people we have, quote, surveyed. Now, if John Flanagan has picked up a second job, he could get counted twice, okay? Because both employers are going to say, John Flanagan works for me. All right, now in the household survey, they will call John's house, and if John was married, the lady picks up the phone, or whoever, she might be working too, or she might be working, making more money than him. But anyway, somebody's going to say, yes, John is working. He's counted once. Now, in the household survey, there's like five numbers. There's the employment population above non-institutionalized over 16. So if you're not in jail, you're not in an institution of some kind, then you're counted. So there's 168 million people of those, of which 268 is the population, of which 168 million are considered in the labor force, and 100 million are not. In the labor force, there's 161 million people that are employed, and there's 6.8 million people that are not employed but alleged to be looking for work. So they're in the labor force, they're just between jobs. Okay, so those are the numbers from the household survey. The only difference between the two surveys is one counts people with more than one job and one probably does not. So if you look at the establishment survey, which you see every month, and the administration, everybody says how great they're doing, we've averaged what? 220, 225 a month for the last year, and maybe going back further than that. All right, so do the math. We're talking 200,000 times 12, which comes out to be what? 2.5 million people, right? Essentially have found jobs in the last 12 months. Am I clear so far here, John?
Yeah.
However, if you look at the household survey, last June, 161 million people were employed. This June, there's 161,199. So, duh. Instead of 2.5-3 million people, we've got 200,000. What the bleep, over. The only, other than adjustments, other than people lying, other than those things, the only possible explanation there is that 2.5 to 2.7 million people now have two jobs.
Yeah, or three.
Or three. I'm going to say that that's not all that healthy, Jen. It could be. I mean, it could be. You could be a five-night-a-week bartender, and the other 2 days, do something during the day or something. It could be somewhat healthy. Whatever. But by and large, it doesn't give you the same measure of health as the establishment survey does, or is that a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. And what about rideshare outfits, Tom. I mean, maybe you know, maybe Carl can tell us.
Now, this is a Carl question. What are you asking me for?
Well, but, for, you know, there's a huge, you know, dispute between Uber and Lyft and these places and their drivers as far as whether they're employees or, you know, independent contractors. So in the, you know, any
well, don't even use Lyft. What about cab drivers? They were never an employee
right,
of
well,
Yellow
and,
Cab.
And of course, you know, there's people now who, you know, maybe consider they're working for Uber, but does Uber think they're an employee? I don't know. I
mean, why is this more important than just median salary and amount of people working?
Well, it's a question of who you're counting. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Why would you take the government's word for it? You could.
Well, I mean, there are two separate
right.
surveys. I mean, at least I'd identify.
They're all crap.
Well, I'm trying to do is explain. There is a specific difference between the two, right?
Not to me.
Well, one is you count. Well, first of all, you would be counted as having two jobs.
I got. It doesn't matter.
Well,
just
it does.
Look at the median income, or look at the average income, and then look at how many people.
Well, but
are,
then it, but then it. That
how
also,
many people are there?
But it walks
of
into
working
that
age, and you can do it by yourself. You don't need the government well, to try to explain.
There's also
not
an explanation.
Do it right anyway.
Okay. There's also an explanation of when you start talking about income. If somebody's a 1099 employee versus a W-2 employee. So, Jan, you just brought up the question about what about Uber? What about cab drivers?
You can look at the income stats, though. You can
where?
Look
how?
At, you can look at what the what people are earning. Just
you can, only if you're W-2. Nobody knows that they're one of the biggest estimates of the year. This is why when, in one man's opinion, the difference between a growing economy and a not growing economy, a contracting economy, is always exaggerated. Because if you and I, and we'll have John, because he'll be our lawyer, decide we're going to start building houses, all right, and we hire 50 people, and we're paying them every week, at the end of the year, they're independent, we give them everybody 1099. The government has no idea that those people are working until they get the 1099. Did they get the income tax return at the end of the year? So somewhere, somebody has to make a determination. Are we growing or not? And oh, by the way, next year, if the business becomes crap and we lay everybody off, nobody knows they're laid off till the next January when they don't get the check. So there are people who do this, what do they call it, John? Birth-death ratio of businesses or something? And they try and figure out how many people are in this never-never land of being hired.
Right.
In the computer world, how many of those people are 1099 employees now? All kinds of them, right?
Right.
So you never really know if they're getting laid off or hired until come January. But yes, you're absolutely right, Greg. In terms of what Carl has been noticing in the last few months, is that hourly wages are going up, but the weekly paycheck is not, which means people are getting cut hours, right? So, John, I mean, out of all this, what do you make of this? I don't think we're doing as good as everybody says we are in terms of the establishment versus household.
Well, it's the whole methodology in these two, you know, statistics allow you, you know, people who, you know, can want to make a meal out of it can presume or infer totally ridiculous or contradictory things from the data. Clearly, it's a way of masking how unhealthy the economy is.
Well, but even if you did it straight, and I'm not, you and I could argue about whether it's straight or not, because neither one of us, we really don't know. Even if it's straight, I'm just saying they're different, and they're gonna have different results, and these are the differences. I mean, at least if we're gonna get on national TV and talk about it, we should at least know what the differences are and explain them to people. You think?
Right. Well, I haven't heard any pundits attempt to explain the discrepancy in a way that, you know, does anything other than make the whole picture look very rosy, which it's clearly not.
Well, right.
You can look up median household income, can't you? That should show.
Again, but it's lagging, and you don't have the 1099 stuff in there. You don't have the part-time stuff in there. And a lot of it.
But on a yearly basis, you can see median household income.
Yeah, it hasn't gone up very much.
Well, that's your that includes all the stupid jobs. That includes everything. That's just income.
And the cut hours too.
Right. People. That should show again what's it called? There's median household income is one, and then median is it salary or is it wage? I think it's income also. So you can look at median income for the individual, and you can look at median income for the household, and kind of see if it's going up or down. And that should tell you all you need to know about jobs. I mean,
median income for individuals.
It's like 2000
was like 36. Now it's like 42 or 3. Yeah, houses, I think, is up to close to 80.
Yeah, so that tells you about
two people working, maybe two and a half.
What's going on? And then if you look at, I don't know how who's excluded now, but what is it? No military and nursing homes? What were we talking about?
No, they're working. You're employed if you're in the military. If you're in a nursing home, you're considered institutionalized. Well, you're also 75, or hopefully 75, 95. Yeah, you're institutionalized if you're in a nursing home.
So those are discounted.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you look up how many people are working or of working age, and then you can kind of back into these numbers. You don't really need to watch the government try to massage data.
Whether they're massaging or not, what I'm saying is...
I think that's a
fact.
What
is the difference? How could both... I'm trying to be nice here. How could both of those numbers be right? And they're going to be right.
They're not going to be right. So why even?
There's
look?
No reason why they should both be
okay,
right.
But if they're,
I mean, if you're thinking them, you know, as reflecting the same conditions, they're not reflecting the same conditions at all. And remember the dispute, you know, in the last couple of years too, Tom, with the number of people in the workforce and how the only thing you could really read from a lot of the numbers were coming out was that whole swaths of the population were dying. You know, these people were not in the workforce anymore because they had died somehow.
Well, you can't blame them for that.
No, but I'm just saying there's so many problems with the way this data is. Well,
okay.
So BLS says it's 16 years old.
And the way it's used and published, there's so many things you don't know about the labor market.
Well, but I think I guess we're on two different chessboards here this morning. What I'm saying is before you criticize, which, by the way, I'm pretty much with you on criticizing. Before you criticize, you at least need to know how the two are accumulated separately. Now, I started by asking the question, is it possible that in the last year, 2.5 million people have picked up a second job, which would be the only explanation that essentially legitimizes both things? And both of you said yes, right?
And a question in the household survey, have you added to your employment? Are you now, you know...
But that's not what they ask. They say, are you...
Of course, right? And that, but if they did, you could probably get a very clear explanation.
I got an angry text from an oil trader friend.
Okay. Doesn't surprise
him. He said, you're wrong.
Chief's right.
You're wrong. The United States consumes more than China.
Sure they do.
So...
We're not even close.
It is. It's 50. Like 20 million barrels for the U.S. and 15 million barrels.
Yeah.
But that was 2022. I'm guessing this is closer. But whatever.
Well, according to this, median income for individuals is 39,599. This is on the U.S. debt clock. But most of, if you go to the Fed survey and stuff, they just use it per household. And I think it's
so individual and household. So yeah, that you can get closer to the real information than anything that BLS tells us intra-month or whatever.
Well, it's coming from the same government, right?
Income is it reflects all of the BS and the job and wages and hours and. Income is just income, right? It'll go up if they're working more, they get a raise or whatever. It'll go down if they get their hours cut or if they get fired.
Median household income in 2022 was 74,000. So it's not quite double.
That was 2022?
Yeah, they always run a little late on that part. Now, percentage of households...
So it should be around 78 now, if inflation is...
Yeah.
If inflation is...
Well, but I wouldn't say your income's going up as fast as inflation. Just saying.
Maybe.
But anyway, that's kind of where that is. Now, But here's the part that I think is the issue, is the median new home.
I mean, that makes sense to me. If income, because at the bottom the minimum wages or the hours, or not the hours, the rate has actually gone up faster than.
Well, in Chicago it's 16, but say it's 12 other places.
But as a consequence, you lose hours, so it would make sense that they're picking up more work or hours somewhere else.
That's exactly right. So,
the median wage probably will be whatever the inflation rate is, or close to it, higher.
The median income, if you were to say, I think it's 39, a little low, but 2000, 31.8, now it's 39.6. Median new home now is 409. Median new home in 2000 is 165. Average new car in 2022, now it's 52. How we doing? How you doing, Jen? Just saying. It's a problem. I mean, when Nancy, I've had some issues with this week in my place regarding hot water heaters and air conditioners and stuff. I don't think anybody's ready for stuff in their house to start to break. I mean, Nancy will tell you how everybody is. I mean, you can say, if you want to be an SOB, I guess, why do these young people, when they buy a house, they want an absolute move-in condition? They don't want anything wrong with it. Well, if you're, the World War II guy, you're going to say, that's because these kids, they don't even know how to handle a pliers or a screwdriver. They don't want to do anything on their own. And there might be some shade of truth in that. But the fact is, when they put the mortgage and everything together, they don't have $5,000 left over to remodel a place. It better be okay.
Or furnish it or anything else.
Yeah, or the last thing you need is the air conditioner to go out the day you move in. But John, when Nancy's going to be on today in a little bit, but I want to also talk. I'm really when we talked about government, you guys are into bitching about government here, and I'm with you on that. But this whole idea, the more I think about this tax increase in areas, and I know I'm jumping around. We talked last week about Cook County has come out with massive tax increases, and the highest percentage gains are in areas that are least, people can least afford it. I don't understand the mentality, John, of winging tax increases back at people can't pay. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to force them? I mean, is there some other motivate before Nancy comes on and talks about the details? What are we trying to do here? What is the point? I mean, we're literally, and people, I couldn't believe it the first time I heard it. Now I've had it confirmed from a million people. There are people living in the South Side, mostly, virtually all poor, but mostly African-American, that have moved from the city, and there's places where you go down the street, you swear you're in Mississippi. But the houses are, people live there, and they're kept up. It's not like it's, and these things are, what do you say the average price is, Jan? 60, 65? And we're talking taxes?
Probably, and there's other places, too, that higher up in certain suburbs where the housing stock always was, higher quality.
Well, you're talking about Flossmoor or places. I mean, I'm talking about
Riverdale or other places, too, that were not like, the poor ones like Robbins.
Chicago Heights was never that poor, and now it is. I got to believe Riverdale's not much better. Nancy might know. A lot of the guys I went to Marist with were from Riverdale. I don't think it was always a blue collar area. I don't think it was ever, houses were ever gorgeous. I'm sure they were just their bungalows or something.
They had a commercial property tax base that they don't have anymore, which is true in a lot of Chicago Heights and many other places. And it's particularly, a problem in the South Suburbs where, everything is kind of a rust belt in process. It's not, what it used to be. The manufacturing jobs, all these, commercial strips are pretty much gone. And that's what I think was really, caused the uptick in, tax bills for residences, because there isn't any way to offload this onto the higher tax rates that commercial operations pay. So that's been a growing problem. I mean, it started probably 20, 30 years ago showing up in the tax bills, and now it's kind of reached a acute phase where it's making whole pieces of the South Suburbs uninhabitable financially. Is this because of some bigger plan? I don't know, but it's certainly going to have that effect.
At the end of the day, I mean, I guess you can, how would I even make another example of it, but somebody's got a house that's $65,000, and their taxes were six, which is ridiculously high on top of it, and you send them a bill for eight. Okay, then, why even waste the stamp, I guess, is my question.
Well, let's think about what is really going to happen. Maria Pappas, the treasurer, said there's already only 65% performance rate on tax bills in the south suburbs. In some communities, it's higher in other places, but it's a critical enough shortfall where this revenue isn't coming in. And how will this play out? Will it be, they're talking about a tax revolt, but a tax revolt means what exactly? You pick at the county building, or you send in a couple bucks and sue the, I don't know what a tax revolt is going to look like. It's more likely that the county is going to go broke, you know, if they let that happen, and they're going to be making up the difference in everybody else's reassessment as it comes around. If they can't get it from the south suburbs, they'll get it from, you know, the north suburbs or the north side of the city the next time they're up for reassessment. I don't see any way around it. There isn't going to be any reduction in county spending, certainly.
All right, so let's,
even as population declines, schools are, you know, are ready to close, none of that's going to mean a savings to the taxpayer by any means.
What is the let's do a quick calculation on the area that I used to be able to do when younger. Let's try it. Say the dude or the lady, whoever is living in this house, is a 1099 employee, and he or she makes $50,000, $45,000, somewhere in there. Let's say 45. Now, if you're a 1099 employee, 15% comes right off the top for unemployment Medicare, right? So the idea that you're not paying any taxes is total BS. So if it's 50, you're already $7,500 in what do you call them? Payroll taxes. Is the state what? State's five? Or is the state 3.5? What's the state?
3.5, I think.
All right, so that's another, say, $1,500. There's probably some deductible there. So now we're up to 9, right? Now, there's going to be gas tax, sales tax all over the place. So say somebody spends 40. 10% of it comes right off the top there because of sales tax, and now we're up to another 4. So now where are we? We're $13,000, and now the guy gets this thing in the mail for like 8. So now we're talking 21, and we're not talking about title, we're not cars, we're not talking about licensing fees, we're not talking about any other stuff. We're talking the guy's up to $21,000 out of 50. The hell's that? Kind of a lot, yes, don't you think?
It's insane.
It's insane for a guy who's basically trying to make ends meet. It's insane.
I think what you'll see, Tom, before we're through, and this is overdue, I think, but the state is going to have to tax retirement income in some fashion. It may not be taxed at the same rate as people on salaries, but there's no way that you can make a state that's declining in population and declining in wealth too. A lot of people moving out are the ones who, you know, are taking a lot of wealth with them or taxing potential with them. It isn't like they're being replaced with people who have, you know, a lot of money to spend on anything, but all taxes. So unless states come up with some other way of making money, and it's not going to just be countywide in the tax assessments, it's going to have to be statewide. And I'm not saying I'm opposed to it either. I don't think it's a good idea to give people on a pension or Social Security a freebie on the state income tax when the feds don't give you freebies. So I just don't see any way around it. I think the tax, real estate tax problem is so, you know, dangerous in what it's going to do to an already slippery slope of people not wanting to hang around here, is that you're going to, you know, be taking more and more properties off the tax rolls completely. This is what's happened in some areas of the South Side. There's no performance on any of this.
Yeah, you're never gonna get that check.
No, and that's built into the taxation, the assessment process now too. So until there's a reversal of that, where there's somehow, you know.
But is there somebody who has got some new pill that he's going to live forever, like a university or like something, a corporation? Is there somebody that wants this property that the minute 50 of them don't pay, somebody's going to swoop in and pay the taxes? And I don't even know. Hopefully, I'll get our buddy Jimmy back in maybe the next couple of weeks. That works for a firm that does. Well, they do mortgages, but a lot of them become distressed mortgages. And what's interesting is, even if you stop paying your mortgage, the bank has a lien on your place. Now, maybe they hire somebody else to try and boot your ass out, but whatever it is, somebody has to keep paying the taxes, because the tax lien goes ahead of the other stuff, right, Jen?
Right.
Okay, so I don't see, if you and I were to buy all these distressed mortgages, say we had the money to do it, and we're going to get them for a discount, okay, I'm trying to explain this thing in like 30 seconds or less. The distressed mortgage industry, if there's somebody has 5,000 of these mortgages, they do some kind of a survey of all of them, and if you or I were in the business, we're going to say, we'll buy all 5,000 mortgages, and we're going to pay, what'd you say, Greg, 75 cents on the buck, or 70, or 80, or something along those lines. And so we're gonna get these mortgages, and we're going to figure out what to do. I don't see how the hell we are going to pay all those taxes for those places. For God's sake, it's way more than we're ever going to make on the mortgage. I mean, how? But you know,
borrow.
Yeah, but somewhere along the line, there's going to be a buffoon on TV that's going to say, the problem is these people aren't paying any federal taxes, even though they are paying 15% payroll taxes. They're going to say they're not paying any federal income tax. But John, they're already up to 40%, right? To say they aren't paying taxes is really misleading, would you say?
Yep.
And plus, what if you go buy lottery tickets and it's even more?
The mechanisms for making property return to the tax rolls are quite limited, because unless you have something that you can actually find, say in an arm's length transaction, somebody who's going to take care of the property, pay the taxes on time, keep the lender happy, keep the property insured, everything else. There's a dwindling number of those people for lots of properties in the city, whole neighborhoods really, and yet as the taxes don't get paid on these properties, they can be offered at scavenger sales if you have, three consecutive years of non-payment, and you can take pretty much any bid that anybody is willing to make. That population of interested people dwindles too. So that all you have a great reset where you get, in effect, a rebate, and the county cancels taxes, because they have to go back to 1980 maybe to find the last time a tax bill was paid on the place. And they're not going to do that, but they have to do something to get this stuff rolling again, and it means that somebody or something has to be, able to turn a profit on this to pay these taxes, whatever they're decided to be when they restart this. And that's going to be a grand plan that is too big for me to get my head around. And
well, I think in this state, this is not going to happen.
Right, and it's not. You don't want one entity deciding this either. Somebody's going to come in and buy an entire township or something. But that seems to be where we're headed.
But who's going to pay it? I mean, who's going to pay that? Nobody wants to. But if we want to,
somebody with a lot of political power who can twist arms and get things reestablished on a more favorable basis.
Well, if you were big enough to say, okay, I'm going to buy 5,000 properties and have enough political balls basically to get a new airport in your area or something, it might be worth it to you. But boy, that's a stretch.
Yeah, and it's not going to be. I mean, who would you trust to be handling the finances for an airport built in Illinois now?
Ugh. All I want to know is I'd want part of the contract. Just saying. But I think what has to happen here, and it's never going to, is we have a big pension problem. I'll just say this real quick. You start by saying, okay, generously, the pension is supposed to be 80 or 85% of your last year's salary. Well, we all know that for generations people have gamed that and added sick time to it and everything else. I would go back and review it all and say, you're getting 85% of your last year's salary, not this other mess that we're sending you. And if you squawk it all, we're going to try and get the rest of it out of you. because you should never should have got it in the first place. The other thing would be, you don't work 20 years for the county and 20 years for the state and get two pensions. Pick one. A lot of people are getting a lot of money that I'm going to say is not deserved, John. I mean, they can say it's deserved because they tricked the game, but it's not deserved, right?
I hear you.
I mean, there's people that never made more than 100 grand a year are getting pensions of 135. You can't do that. If it's your father, you might say the old boy deserves it, but the fact is we can't afford it. I'm just saying. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 13. Guess what? Our good stocks are up. Tesla's down a little bit. The rest of them are all up. Meta's up 230. Meta had a big day on Friday. It's one of these every day. NVIDIA's up 89 cents. That's not much for them. We'll be right back. Nancy.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at ptisecurities.com. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Matt Burn on the board. SP Futures up 450. NASDAQ Futures up 14. We have inflation data coming in on Thursday to CPI. We have on Friday, the Dow was up 67, S&P up 30, NASDAQ futures up 164. NASDAQ's up like 1% a day. By the end of the year, we're going to all be so rich, it's scary. It's just scary. I don't know what I'm going to spend it all on. DAX up 58.3%. These are down a little bit from when we last did it. FTSE up 15.2%. CAC around up 7.1%. So, yeah, they were up more an hour ago. Still up. Or in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 131, but careful with that. There's still 40,780, as high as they've been in a long... I mean, I don't think they've ever been this high. Matter of fact, they haven't never been this high. Hang Seng down 275, 1.5%, 17,524. They're sinking into the abyss again. Shanghai down 27, 29.22. Again, they were over 3,000 for a while and right back down. So whatever's going on in China is not good. Bonds, 10-year up 2 basis points, 4.29%. The bond unchanged, 2.53. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.09. Oil down 54 cents, 82.62. So still stuck at the real high end of this range of like, what, 75 to 83, 84. Brent down 45 cents, 86.10. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.34. RBOB down a penny, 2.54. I'm really surprised that some of these places, the national average is like 2.50. In some areas, Wisconsin and down south, they're like 3.10, 3.05, 300, $3. I don't see how the hell you get gas for $3 when the wholesale price is 2.55. But I guess they can do it. Gold down $13, 23.83, at a big rally last week. Silver down 35 cents, that's 1%. Silver had a big rally last week, it's 31.33. Copper unchanged, 4.65. Crypto had a whack last week, it's up $9, but 57,112, I'm going to say it was 65 a couple of weeks ago. And the dollar continues to shrink a little bit as the euro's up over 108, 108.4, and the British pound is 128.3. It was almost under 127, and the euro was 107, so the dollar's weakened here a little bit. What do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:38 a.m. on July 8th, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, it's 73 degrees this morning. Humid and some sun today. Scattered thunderstorms expected downtown this afternoon with a high of 81 degrees. Down in Phoenix, 89 degrees right now. Expect sunny skies today and a high of 117 degrees, a low of 88. Over to sports, yesterday the Grant Park 165 took place here in Chicago, actually just down the street from where we do the live show. So despite rainy weather, the race went ahead as planned. In first place was driver Alex Bowman. This marks his eighth Career Cup Series win. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs beat Los Angeles Angels 5-0. White Sox lose to Marlins 7-4. And tonight, the White Sox are back home with the Twins. Game starts at 7:10 p.m. As far as the WNBA, Chicago Sky lost their game against Seattle Storm yesterday, 84-71. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
We have Nance.
We do indeed.
Yes,
Nance, how are you? Did you?
Good. How are you?
All right. Did you watch the Cubs yesterday?
No, I did not.
What'd you think of the all-female broadcast booth?
I didn't see the game.
Oh, well, there you go. No. You missed it.
Yeah, I did. How was it?
You know, I think the lady who comes in and does the play-by-play, I think she's real good. I wouldn't mind having her all the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, she's fine. The lady who was the color, she might have played softball, but she's one of the sideline ladies, and she's had some experience. She's been sideline on Monday Night Football and stuff. She's fine. I mean, they're you know... They got where they are because they're good at what they do. I mean, it's, you know, they're fine. And they had Laura Ricketson as a guest. I don't know if I was all over that necessarily, but just saying. anyway, so what do you think of India's prime minister? You know, some of the stuff you read here before we get into the mortgage stuff and Nance. India Prime Minister Narendra Modi is set to meet with President Vladimir Putin in Moscow on Monday, set to reinforce the development of traditionally friendly relations between Russia and India. But get a load of this. One of his big issues, you can knock me over a feather when I read this crap. Since March this year, India has sought the release of nationals said to have been duped into serving in the Russian army. Following the uncovery of what the South Asian nation has labeled a major human trafficking network. What the hell is that all about?
I have no idea. John, are you there?
Yeah. I don't know nothing about that.
So we're kidnapping
it. It would surprise me. You saw the big expose of the child trafficking that was discovered this past week. There are like, 200 children found? They're not saying exactly how many places they were found, but you know, people doing human trafficking are pretty good at hiding feelings.
I tell you what, if you would have told me about human trafficking when I was in like high school, I would have said by the time I got to this age, there wouldn't be any. It's worse. Well, I don't know if it's worse, but.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you dupe a guy into serving in the army? You must have to kidnap the dude. How many of them have died?
And give an offer they can't refuse. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, So you're kidnapping people from the country next to you to serve in your army. I'm sure they didn't think of it. Somebody must have done this before, but the Romans used to do that, right? They get people from
That's why we went to war with Britain in 1812. Impressment of people on the high sea. So, forced into the British Navy.
Oh, God.
I don't know how anyone gets volunteers to go into the Russian army. I mean, come on.
I think the term volunteer is somewhat loosely described, Nancy.
I would say so.
God. Right. I don't know if you heard us talking earlier. We're talking about the motivation of sending people tax bills when you know they can't pay. And we're just...
Yes, I heard this retirement, tax the retirement. Boo, John.
I know. That's the third mail. I know, Nancy.
I'm not going to go down to the mailbox. So I'm going to get hate mail for this Flanagan dude.
The state is more likely to get money that way than waiting for people to write a check to the Cook County collector.
Yeah.
Well, I'm there's got to be a way to find a way to fix the problem. I just have it just has to make sense. Taxing the retirement is only going to cause a whole nother flood of people leaving. The real estate tax bills, I don't know what. The more people I talk to, the more people who have gotten these bills, Tom. I was surprised, but they've got to find a way to stop taxing us and just live within our means. But you can't keep letting the migrants in, and I mean, we have so many other issues that are going on that are not going to help this situation, and are continuing to go on.
Well, you end up being able to put, and this is the people get, I use the term, suckered into this stuff. Okay, and I use the term, and I mean, I do this all the time, and nobody pays attention to me, I hope. You talk about, football, okay? UCLA going in the Big Ten because they can get $40 million more and everybody's all for it. They get $40 million more in TV revenue. The budget of UCLA is $11.5 billion a year. It's not even a pimple on the ass of an elephant. Now, is the migrant situation a good situation? No, but how many people, and I'm not accusing you of this, Nance, how many people will think that if there were no migrants here, everything would be okay and we'd be solvent? It's got to be. Can it even be a half of 1% of our state budget? It can't be.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the they're housing them in Cook County, and, Cook County's the one having the trouble with the real estate tax bill, and it just doesn't seem to be... It doesn't seem to be helping anything.
Well, I'm going to say not a dime if somebody in Chicago Heights actually sends in $8,000 out of some miracle. Not a dime of that $8,000 is going to the migrants by my place. If it is, it is a dime. It's not $7,000.
That's true. Your original question of, if the migrants weren't here, we would still have these same problems. But the question is, what is the money going on?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to pensions. A boatload of it's going to pensions. Look at how many police have retired in the last 2 years or 3 years. And they can retire, 52, Jan? 55?
55, I think. Or maybe, no, it might be lower.
Please, huh? Might be lower. I mean, how do you pay somebody? And these are good people, or policemen, for God's sake. But if they're in there for 20 years and they live to be 100, how do you pay somebody for 70 years for 20 years' work? But, you talked about, and Jan, just became an enemy of Nancy by saying he wants to tax her retirement stuff. You look at Illinois, every one of these states, I don't know, Jan, you're better at this than me. Somewhere, someplace, or maybe Matt Byrne, I found the most interesting article that had to do with taxation and retirement and stuff in like every state in the country. And everybody's got this idea that this state's better here, better there. If you take them all together, a lot of them end up equaling out. The one I saw the best was Wyoming. You don't want to croak there because their estate tax is huge. But Illinois' one big advantage for hanging on to people is they don't tax your Social Security. Now, if we blow that one, I don't know if we got anything left.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of in the statement of tax retirement. I think that would be almost like the last draw for people here. because they can't.
And I'm not,
you're not advocating it.
I'm just saying that given the state's behavior, they may feel themselves forced to do something like that. And of course, it's going to alienate, a lot of people enough to get them to move out of the state. But even, it's going to, mark some politicians for, public humiliation too, because there's some powerful interests that don't want this to happen. But I just don't see them having any other bargaining chips right now. They're stupid enough to do something like that, let me put it that way. So.
Well, Lance, what you've been, Aud does a little bit more of it because she's actually involved in the house sale. But how many people, I'm going to go back to, you guys have been pals forever. I mean, let's say 10 years. People 8 years ago, 7 years ago, were bailing to Indiana, selling a house here at, 10 years ago, $350, and buying one there equivalent of at $220. Commuting in a little bit longer of a drive, but the gas is cheaper in Indiana. No big deal. Audrey claims that's all pretty much evened out now, hasn't it?
It has. It's that whole dream is over. I mean, the houses in Indiana have really gone up. I mean, house to house in Illinois, Indiana's probably 100,000 more.
Really?
Yeah, in at least in the St. John area.
Now, Wisconsin's though, isn't the Wisconsin state tax higher than ours, Jen?
I think it is, yeah.
So, I mean, it's,
I believe it is too.
This idea of fleeing across the border to save on all this stuff, I don't know if that's working so well. I mean, I don't know what border you have to go to. But some states, and a lot of it is, that sort of, I'm not taking a shot at the right-wingers today, but they talk about these red states. Well, hell, again, another article that I can't put my hands on, I keep finding it. Is this stuff scrubbed out of the net or something? I used to run all the stuff off. My brother got all pissed off, but I was killing all the trees and then stacking my room with stuff. There was a guy who put one together about federal largesse in states, and it had to do with John Nance. It was how many people in the state work for the federal government, how many retired people getting federal retirement checks like military and stuff are in the state, and it had to do with federal budgets for people building submarines and whatever. There, some of these states like New Mexico and someplace, Illinois, what would you guys guess how many people in Illinois work for the government? It's got to be less than 1%, right? It's got to be way less. But in some of these states, it's like 6% or something.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a big number. And then half of those people retire there, and it's the amount of federal dough going in per capita to, like, New Mexico versus Illinois. It's not even on the same page, is it?
No.
And yet New Mexico's telling you, hey, we got this all figured out. Well, yeah, duh. And some of the states have really changed. I mean, Illinois was actually reasonably high of the chain. So was California. And how many bases have been closed in the last 30 years? We got one left here? Great Lakes?
Yeah.
California doesn't have very many either. Well, they got the stuff in San Diego, but all the stuff in Oakland, all those places, that's all closed, right?
Well, and New Mexico is no better run than Illinois. It's probably a lot worse.
But they got, when you got all that kind of money coming from one spot, it's like us the last few years with the COVID. What are these guys going to? What are Pritzker and Johnson going to do without COVID money? I think Pritzker used it a lot better than Johnson did, but still, it just. Well, Nance, what are you? Mortgage industry and is anybody moving that doesn't have to or doesn't have cash?
No, people are only moving from the same stuff: the divorce, a transfer, an estate. There isn't enough on the market. And, the horizon doesn't look any brighter ahead from what I can tell, but we'll see where it goes.
Mortgage rates are off their high, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not as high as what they once were, but, we still have an election coming up, so I just don't know how much of this is manufactured that we're seeing and what's real. That's the difficult part to look ahead because, for the Democrats have, more than one problem that they have to fix. And or the perception that they're fixing it. I'm not saying they're actually going to fix it. The perception that they have to make things better by, you know, the time the election comes. So I don't know what they're going to do, but they have a lot of work ahead of them.
Well, I would say that in the immortal words of my buddy Dr. J, and I'm not, I know it's, you know, for conservative people that have a lot of wealth or, you know, are supposed to hate the Democrats. I don't see how people of wealth could possibly have done any better than during the reigns of Obama and this guy in terms of inflation screwing the younger people, screwing the working class, and benefiting the wealthy. Obama and Biden together have under not maybe not on purpose, but under their leadership has separated the haves and the have-nots more than any time I can even think of in this country.
Absolutely.
And then as my buddy Dr. J, who claims he's very conservative, said, if I could put Obama back in office for 4 years, because I've never done better than when this guy was there. So, I mean, I'm not so sure even the people, the politics, realize which side their bread is buttered at, because I don't know if it is any better than these guys.
Yeah.
Not saying that's a reason to vote for Biden, but if you look at their money, the market goes up every friggin' day, for God's sake. Could you possibly...
Go ahead, John. I had a question. The other day I saw a piece in the Epoch Times by James Gorey, who was writing about assumable mortgages, and he was talking about, you know, VA, some, I don't know what kind of VA loans are assumable. You don't have to be a veteran to qualify to assume a mortgage. I'm wondering, are you involved in that in any way as a broker, where somebody comes to you and is seeking to qualify for an assumable mortgage? Can you help such people, or do you know how much of it is going on, so that you might have a shot at assuming somebody's 3% mortgage rather than trying to qualify for a 7% mortgage?
You know, I saw that article and I was shocked, because it's very clear on all the papers that you sign that the mortgage is not assumable. I mean, they have a spot. Is this assumable mortgage or is it not? And there, it's always marked is not. So I was kind of surprised to hear that. And the VA is a stickler about, you have to be a vet to have the first qualifying piece to becoming a VA mortgage.
That's what I thought, yeah.
I was shocked to read it, and I thought, you know, it's printed, so of course I'm reading it, but I just don't know if I believe it. It might be a thought by someone, but to assume a mortgage, I don't even think you'd have to qualify. I think you would actually be just taking it over and making the payments. I'm not sure how the paperwork would go with that.
Way back in the day when they actually had them, you had to qualify.
But you assume that mortgage, right? So the mortgage company qualified them then?
Well,
servicing?
Yeah, I mean, when I bought my first house, this is when mortgage rates were running up by a percent a month, for God's sake. So, and this is in the 80s, or the late 70s, 80s, a lot of the mortgages were assumable. How Nance, is a mortgage not assumable by... If husband and wife sign it and they get divorced, how is it not assumable by one of the person who ends up with the house? That seems odd.
I think those were accepted. If you're already a party to the mortgage, I think you can assume another mortgage or
Nancy, burdens. A lady who sounds just like Nancy, you said if somebody gets divorced, they need a new mortgage.
Well, it's what happens is when two people sign for a mortgage, okay, and then they get divorced, all right? And let's say the woman keeps the house and she could afford it on her salary. However, the mortgage company will not release the husband from the obligation without refinancing.
Okay.
That's
so
it.
It's,
I mean,
not that it's not assumable. It's just, it doesn't let the other person off the hook, which becomes unfair for the party that's been freed. They're free of the property. They have no interest in the property anymore, but they still own 50% of the debt.
He's also free of the wife.
Correct. But
or the other way around.
Right. It doesn't matter, but he's still the party that has been released owns none of the property, 0%, and owns 50% of the debt.
Yeah.
So it's not assumable.
And the mortgage company will let No, the mortgage company will not let them off the hook for the debt. And that's where the problem comes in, where you have to get refinanced.
When did the, without showing my age, when did the assumable mortgages go to the way of the dodo bird? It had to be, God, I was like 25 or 30.
I would say 2000, somewhere in there.
Oh, I think it was before that.
Well, it might have been, but I mean, I know for sure by 2000, they almost everything I saw was being marked not assumable at all.
Well, the tricks they used to do back in those days when you'd lend the person the down payment. Mortgages, it was crazy. None of that, you can't get away with any of this stuff today. But you know what, Nance? I'm not so sure anybody was all hurt by that.
Well, you know, Tom, back in the day, the savings and loans did the mortgages mainly.
Yeah.
And you knew your customer.
Right.
And it was just a neighborhoody type thing. And now it's a, you know, national product that, you know, you can do online. And I mean, all the comfort you had in it before is gone. So I think that's when you started seeing the switch to not assumable, because they didn't even know the person they were lending to. Well, I mean, when I was young, my parent, we all went into the bank, sat there while they were filling out their application, right? I mean, we probably looked pitiful, and they got the mortgage.
Yeah. Well, you knew everybody. You knew the block. They knew the house.
Right.
Correct. That's all gone. It's just now it's just a piece of paper in front of you, and you have to make a decision based on what's in front of you. And I think that's why the assumable went away.
Well, there's a lot of this.
Plus, the banks held the mortgages. I don't think Fannie and Freddie held them too much back then.
No, the bank, the savings loan held them. They had to hold, but they could have expanded that some and sold some. But there was a lot of things that could have happened. By the way, who was on the show, John, last week that was telling me about an article? They're going to send it to me, and they never did. About somebody who's wrote this big deal about how Volcker purposely blew up the savings and loan industry, which I've been sort of suspecting for quite a while.
Yeah, me too.
Who was that? There's supposedly an article like that out there. Because, Nance, when I was in grad school, the people who were in the risk should be spread out and all this other kind of stuff, these are the same guys that love the idea of the NASDAQ, the national market site where anybody could be a market maker. They loved it. You know, the fact is, for the first 20 years, it was probably the most crooked market around. And they ended up having a huge settlement and all kinds of stuff. But these people were convinced that the savings and loan situation was a total anachronism. It was back in the dinosaur era, and it should never be like that. And that's why I always got the idea. The big banks wanted that industry. And one of the reasons why they wanted it, was that, I'll go back to the original, kick me if I'm wrong here, you guys. 85% of the loans, the savings and loan put out there had to be for mortgages, correct?
Yeah.
But they could not give out, they could not have a demand deposit. You could not have a checkbook from a savings and loan. You got your passbook. Now, it didn't mean if the place was, if you had $10,000 in there or whatever the number was, and you walked in with your passbook, theoretically, they could hand, what was it, 60 days, Nance? They didn't have, it was a time deposit. It was not, but by and large, every time you went in and said, I'm buying a car, give me $2,000 of my 10, they grease you the $2,000. I mean, it was always, unless there was a problem, it really was a demand deposit. The only difference is you had a cart you're behind in there and couldn't send somebody a check. So the savings and loans wanted to become more and more like banks. And the banks were like, we don't want this happening. And all of a sudden, they were all out of business because, they're paying 12% on a deposit and the mortgages are 6. And I think we all can figure out that's not going to last too long. So they basically put all these guys out of business. And everybody loved it on the academia side. They had no business being there anywhere. It was a dinosaur industry. And you know what? I think they were wrong. There's nothing that says that the savings and loan couldn't package up some mortgage and sell 25% of them, 50% of them to other people outside. It could have been done inclusively and not exclusively, sort of like trading on the trading floors. It didn't have to go, just because you want electronic, didn't mean it have to go to five firms instead of 2,000 people. They could have been allowed access, and they're not. Is it? I'm seeing some serious similarities there that I can't help but be suspicious of.
Yeah, I agree completely with that.
Nance, does that make me just a suspicious sort of guy or what?
No, I agree. I mean, I absolutely agree. Look at all the industries that are no longer because they've been replaced by, you know, they've been just replaced, period. Well, how's that theory going to work if we go to digital currency?
That's going to be a big problem. You're going to lose a lot of freedom there.
Yeah, so I just, and yet people are pushing for digital currency. Don't you see that, John?
Yeah, it's just, you know, the SNLs were the greatest bulwark against what happened in 2007, 2008, because you could have never had the fake appraisals and the fake mortgages with the SNLs like you had there. So,
right. They all knew the houses. I mean, it was just a whole different feel and vibe, but it's so different now.
Yeah, and I'm not, and it's, I don't know
this
that it's
is
better.
Progress, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So, Nance, what I asked you before, where did, I mean, I've got the 10-year made it to 5%, you know, for a day. Now it's back to 4.27. So the mortgages got the worst, 7.5, and now they're what, 6.75 or something?
No, they're still in the sevens, Tim.
Really?
Mean, yeah, I believe they're still in the sevens. A lot of it depends on the credit score and the risk, and then how much you're putting down.
Okay, so well, does anybody put 20 or 15 anymore?
No. Very rare.
I thought that was the whole problem in 2007. Now we're right back to it.
Yep.
Well, the problem in 2007 and 2008 wasn't that. The problem became when they started doing stated income mortgages. And then that in itself was okay. But what they did then, all of a sudden, someone who's on salary is giving you a stated income? Why? But it was okay. And it wasn't okay. And then they had these 2-3 ARM mortgages, and those were for people who were, you know, really very low income. They had a lot of things around them, but they just, you know, the whole thing was just crooked, and the people never really got out of debt. They charged ridiculous rates, but they gave them the money, and they never should have given them the loans.
Well, then you had how much was there 35?
Like anything else?
Well, it was 35 hours of leverage stacked on every dollar alone, right? We don't have that now, so I mean, I don't think we're anywhere near as even though the numbers I think show us in worse shape than 2007. We don't have the catalyst of all the leverage on top of it. Am I correct there, or am I missing something?
I'm not sure, because the people with COVID and adding to the back end of the mortgages, and then they're still continuing doing that. I don't know if we just don't, if it's transparent or not. Because then how many people are underwater?
So the people who didn't pay.
I really know.
So the people who didn't pay all got added to the back end, right?
Correct.
And inflation, Tom, and the shaky job market are things we didn't have in 2007 either. So.
That's true. That is true, Jen.
John, are you hearing that people are losing their jobs? Because I am.
Yeah. And are worried that, you know, a layoff is imminent, because they've seen there's already been layoffs where they're working and they fully expect to be laid off, and that's just as bad. But that becomes a depressive effect on people's, you know, hopes and energies too. That's got takes its own toll.
Right, and I've never seen. See, there's that going on that you now. I don't hear about that on the news or anything like that. I haven't seen that, but then. The other thing is the food prices. People are just flocking around looking for sales.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it's the services that are the worst. Got to try and get an air conditioner fixed or something, but food is bad. Guys, thank you. Good stuff as usual. Nance, you're out the next 2 weeks, right?
Yes, sir.
So we have an odd 2 weeks in a row. That's fine. We had you 2 weeks in a row. That was cool. Actually, got to see you the other day. You're looking good. Everything's going good. So.
We're making progress. John wasn't there, though. I was in MC. John,
he's
the table.
Never there. We're going to have to go and grab John at his place and go to a place right by him. And even then,
somebody's got
to
give me his address, because I will go there and drag him out and say, you're coming.
You can't. You know, the problem is you might have to drag a rat with you. John found a rat in his place.
Three
Did
rats.
You really, John?
Oh, yeah. They were in the kitchen of the downstairs unit here. I was wrestling with that last week. My co-owner down there, she was like, well, I wouldn't want it in my kitchen either. But they're all over the neighborhood, and there's been, demolition and concrete work being done with new garages right around here. I think that's upset the burrowing patterns. So we're seeing rats in places we never saw them close in anyway. So we're trying to control it within the confines of the building, which is, enough to keep track of for a while. So.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, a mouse is bad enough, but a rat, my God.
Rat would be, they got little feet and everything. It's just frightening.
Okay, on that happy note, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jock. SP viewers up 7, SP viewers up 14. Rats in your kitchen. Oh, God. John, thank you. Thank you for that. See everybody tomorrow. See everybody tomorrow.
Nowhere near the food preparation.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
20,000 francs says it isn't.
Is that a serious offer?
I just paid out 20. I'd like to get it back.
Make it 10. I'm only a poor, corrupt official.